Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. This is Upfront on Love Sport.
This is the James Gray Show podcast edition. Please do leave us a rating or a review wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, you can tune into the show every weekday from 1 p.m. until 3:30 p.m. on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
It's Friday. You're listening to the James Gray Show on Love Sport Radio, the Friday edition, the celebratory edition. You have to remember that we spend basically the whole week waiting for today just so that we can get away from here. But I've got the lovely producer Mike, the stand-in producer Mike in for me. He's wearing his mum's glasses because he's lost his as well. Let's talk about Chelsea, shall we? Because they were in action at Stamford Bridge last night. As I mentioned, they needed penalties to see off Eintracht Frankfurt, who gave as good as they got. Let's face it, Luka Jovic, one of Europe's hottest strikers at the moment, scored in both legs, absolutely bullied the Chelsea defence at times as well. And no surprise that he was on the score sheet again, but he could not inspire his team through to the Europa League final. Absolutely gutted they were at the end, which I'm sure you can understand, given the circumstances and given the size of team they are. You know, yeah, they get big crowds in, and the atmosphere's brilliant, but to reach a Europa League final would have been absolutely massive for them. So disappointed, but obviously good for Chelsea, who've had an up and down year. Maurizio Sarri's taken a lot of stick. I think if he finishes third and wins the Europa League, a lot of Chelsea fans will have to hold their hands up and say, sorry, we got this one wrong. Let's run through the performances from last night, shall we? As you know, we like to do player ratings on the James Gray Show. It just gets us going. It's something quite interesting. Let's start with keeper Arrizabalaga. He made an excellent save to deny Frankfurt a spectacular volley in the first half. And then the penalty shootout started to loom. And I was sitting there going, I really hope Sarri's got a sub left. It's Willy Caballero's time. Unfortunately, he did not. So keeper was left out there and he redeemed himself for those histrionics at Wembley when he refused to be substituted. Made two really, really good saves in the shootout. Chelsea went behind, of course, through Azpilicueta missing, but then two excellent saves, one down the middle and one to his right. Staying still. Brilliant to stay still and save with his legs to get Chelsea back into the shootout. I've given him a 9. I think he deserves that 9. It's a really big moment in a young man's career. He gave an interview last week basically saying, if I was asked to come off again, I would do it. I like to think that that would have been the case even last night, but showed that he can save penalties just as well as the next man, even if the next man is Willy Caballero. Let's move on to Cesar Azpilicueta, captain on the night. He was given a really tough time by Filip Kostic, who has impressed at left wing back, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one or two clubs. Arsenal? Don't they need a left back? Maybe he's your man, Filip Kostic. Gave Azpilicueta a really difficult night. And then, of course, he had to fill in at centre half as well. After Andreas Christensen went off, Gary Cahill started getting his tracksuit top off and then was told to keep it on because they were going to shuffle Azpilicueta centre half. Did all right there, but nothing special, and then missed a penalty as well. Had a goal disallowed quite correctly, but did his best to claim it. Always good to see. I've given Azpilicueta a 5. David Luiz was dreadful, I thought. Really poor for that goal. What was he doing? What was he trying to do? The ball gets knocked down and he was never going to get to the ball, and yet he threw himself forward and he got caught horribly out of position and Eintracht Frankfurt scored. He only has himself to blame, frankly, and it wasn't the only bit of poor defending. Bullied repeatedly by the forward line, I wrote in my notes. I've given him a 5 as well. Christensen, a nasty injury forced him off. I felt for him. He wasn't brilliant on the night. Hardly authoritative anyway, giving him a 6. Emerson at left back instead of Alonso once again. I wasn't that impressed. He got forward a bit with the ball, got into some good positions, but didn't provide much of an attacking threat, really. I just wasn't that impressed, and I haven't been on repeated occasions. Seems to promise a lot and deliver very little, so I've given him a 6. I don't think I could give him much more or much less, frankly. Move into the midfield. It was Kovacic, Jorginho and Loftus-Cheek in there. I thought the midfield was an area Chelsea really, really struggled last night. They couldn't retain possession. There wasn't much accuracy of pass. I've given Kovacic a 6 because he just doesn't have the technical quality of N'Golo Kante or the engine. He tried to imitate it, but frankly, it was a poor emulation. Loftus-Cheek was the star in the middle. A quiet second half. Chelsea fans seemed to disagree with his withdrawal. They booed him off But I think it was more the booing of the change. But still an eight, I think. A really nice finish and starting to grow into that role. Up front, Willian a six for me. Bright early, but faded again. How often do we say that about him? Giroud a six similarly, but I think he was actually struggling a little bit. You saw him taking some painkillers about half an hour in. And Hazard, the absolute star of the show again. Brilliant work to set up Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Created a chance out of nowhere. Scored the crucial penalty. Shook hands with the goalkeeper afterwards. How Chelsea are going to miss him when he goes. If his last touch is to score a winning penalty in a shootout to put them into the Europa League final, I don't think they can ask much more from him.
Love sports.
Arsenal scored 4 goals away from home last night. I wasn't expecting that. I'm pretty sure Arsenal fans weren't expecting it either. 3 of them came from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. His hat-trick set up that all-English Europa League final, and the Gunners are now 1 win away from Champions League qualification. Unai Emery can win a 4th Europa League. Would you believe it? We've got on the line an absolute Arsenal legend in Nigel Winterburn, who joins me now. Nigel, if Arsenal do win the Europa League and beat Chelsea in that final, do you think they can consider this a successful season?
Well, it's already been, I think, a successful season for Arsenal in terms of changing manager and Unai Emery coming in. I think this season for me was more about assessing the squad. Yes, you want to try and qualify for Champions League with a league position, but you know, Arsenal have got to the Europa League final now, and they really need to go on and win that to secure the Champions League. So it's been a success in terms of with the change of management. I think that needed to happen. And really, it's been, as I just said, it's been an assessment season for me for Unai Emery. And then looking forward to what happens in August with terms of players leaving and players coming into the football club.
Obviously, we already know a couple of players that will be leaving because they were on the pitch with their presentations the other day, the likes of Ramsey, Cech and Welbeck. What areas of the squad do you think need looking at most seriously in terms of bringing players in?
Well, I'd still like to see a pacey, attacking, wide player coming into the club, potentially another midfield player as well. And there's a lot being said about defensively. We need to re-strengthen there. But, I think Unai Emery may be looking at the likes of Rob Holding, who had a fantastic 6 months and then picked up a serious knee injury. He was coming through and was very, very consistent. So it's just a case where Unai Emery feels that he needs to strengthen the team. Everyone will look and say defensively, Arsenal haven't been great again this season, but it's not just the defence that you need to look at. It's how quickly, when Arsenal do concede the goals, that they get played through the line. So I'm quite excited about what's going to happen to Arsenal next season, and very intrigued to see where Unai Emery thinks that Arsenal would need strengthening. But my own thoughts are a wide player and certainly another midfield player, potentially another centre-half, but I can't see much more than that coming into the football club, because we're hearing that Arsenal haven't got a vast amount of money to spend.
If Arsenal do win a trophy, it'll still be a successful season, but that obviously that they have to work on the squad this summer because the away form's been so poor, is that right?
Yeah, that's my view. I mean, you can't have, as just saying, you can't have such a fantastic home form, and then last season and this season the away form has been dreadful. So Unai Emery's got to look at that. I mean, you're right that the other teams around them will re-strengthen, obviously apart from Chelsea, because the transfer embargo is on them at the moment. They may go to arbitration again to see whether they can get that taken off. But we shouldn't be looking at what's happening with Chelsea. We should be looking at what's happening with Arsenal, and they certainly will need to. Well, 2 or 3 players will, I think, on top of the ones that are already leaving, may leave. And then they'll need to replenish the squad to make them stronger for next season.
Nigel, I want to pick your brains about something someone was trying to argue with me about the other day. City and Liverpool are probably going to end on 98 and 97 points respectively. And I was saying that's an incredible achievement for Liverpool to finish second with 97 points. Unlucky. And then someone said, oh, does that make them better than the Invincibles? Because they only got 90 points. And I wonder what the comparison is between the dominant performance of the likes of City and Liverpool, albeit not in an unbeaten fashion, compared to maybe the competitiveness of the league in a season like 03-04 when Arsenal, of course, went unbeaten?
Well, of course, obviously, it's a massive achievement for the Invincibles because we're always ready seeing now that you've just described two teams that are way ahead of the rest in the Premier League at the moment, but they couldn't go through that season unbeaten. Mm. So it's hard to make a comparison because you can only play against the opposition that's there for the year that you're playing in. So to try and say, this Liverpool team is better than the Invincibles, to me is completely irrelevant. The 03-04 Invincibles are there for a reason. Everybody that was put in front of them, they managed to go those 49 games undefeated.
Yeah.
This season, Liverpool and Man City are way ahead of the rest, but unfortunately, one of them is going to be the loser, and that's why sport is so great.
Yeah, or in my case, as a Liverpool fan, probably why sport is so heartbreaking. I also wanted to pick your brains on the left-back front, because we were having an argument in the office about England's best left-back, and of course, you had that title for at least a period of time. Danny Rose, Ben Chilwell, Luke Shaw, we've got a lot of quality in that area, but I was wondering, in your opinion at the moment, who the best player there is?
Well, I think Chilwell is coming through at Leicester and improving all the time. I still like Luke Shaw, if I'm completely honest with you, when he's fully fit. I still think he's maybe slightly the better defender, good at going forward. And I think you've got to get that balance right. There seems to be a shift particularly with the fullbacks, comfortable on the ball, but less ability defensively. But when you come up against the big teams, if you're talking about the league you're in, or playing for England or whatever country you're playing for, you're going to come up against some amazing teams, and you need to be able to deal with situations one against one. But it's very, very fascinating because for Gareth Southgate, depending on how we wanted to play, whether we wanted to go in with a back four or a back five, he could potentially pick each one of those fullbacks to go and play in a different way for him. So it is, for me, it's intriguing, and it certainly sets a problem for Gareth Southgate. But he looks like he's doing a decent job to me at the moment. So I'll let him decide who he considers to be the best. But you might find that he's got his thoughts that one's better in a back four and another one's better in a back five because they're more comfortable on the ball and more adventurous going forward.
Just finally, Nigel, to come back to Arsenal, I must get your prediction for the Europa League final. Arsenal versus Chelsea, I'm sure you've got a heart versus head decision to make here. Which way do you think it'll go?
No, I always go with the heart. I'm always going to pick my team, and as I said to you, listen, I hope it's a fantastic game and Arsenal come out of eventual winners because, I want us back into that Champions League football and it would be another trophy on the table. And also, I think it would help Unai Emery with the board in releasing some more funds. So, you're asking me a question from an Arsenal man. So I'll take whatever victory comes our way.
Absolutely. Nigel, thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure to speak to a real club legend there. That's Arsenal man Nigel Winterburn. Arsenal through and through.
Love sports.
This is the James Gray Show. We're here until 3:30 p.m. looking ahead to a really brilliant weekend of playoff action. And of course, a Premier League title race concludes on Sunday afternoon as well. But I want to talk about the Championship a little bit to our next guest, because Sean Derry is on the line, former Leeds and QPR defender. First of all, the news that Mark Warburton has been named as QPR's new boss, succeeding Steve McLaren at the Championship Club, broke earlier this week. Sean, you're a man who knows QPR pretty much inside out these days. Do you think Mark's a good fit for the club?
Afternoon, guys. I hope you're well.
Yeah, get on well, mate. Cheers.
Good, good. Well, obviously, the fact that the football club have been in a pretty real turmoil football club of the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's the money away from the scenes. It just needs some stability. And that is the one thing that's been crying out for the club. And that's the one thing that kind of people like myself, people who know the club, I've always said, just stay still, just stand still for a little bit and see where it takes you. You can't continually keep swapping and changing. It's just madness. So hopefully now, you know, with Mark and with his experiences, obviously he knows the Championship and he's done really well in the Championship in the past. Let's hope he can just have that stability that's really craved at Loftus Road.
How important is it for a manager coming into any Championship club to have some of that previous knowledge of the league itself? Because I always wonder, it's such a long season, you've got to have a bank of knowledge and contacts in already. You don't really have time to do anything else, do you?
Absolutely not. I mean, obviously, with Mark being appointed only a couple of days ago as well, a lot of clubs forget about making plans now at the end of the season. They started making plans for next season 6 months ago. Mm. You know, that's how you do your recruitment. You know, you can't just work with what's available now. You put things in place. You know, there's pre-season trips to organise. Everything that goes with managing a football club. Mark's having to probably work through the summer, and a lot of managers are going to be taking time to, you know, just relax after the season. But Mark's probably going to be in there from day dot really up until the start of next season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder, you know, I remember watching a documentary about New England Patriots and Bill Belichick the day after they won a Super Bowl turning up at work at 7 a.m. and they said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, planning for next season." I wonder if football management's a bit like that as well. Do you think QPR have a lot of work to do over the summer? Because obviously they finished 19th in the Championship this year, but there was a time when they weren't that far off the playoffs. They did have some good moments during the season.
They did. I mean, the start was poor, and then they recruited two experienced players in Tamer Hemed and I forget the other centre-forward who came along and he'd done really well.
Naki Wells as well on loan, yeah.
Naki came in and, you know, I think that was needed. Cameron arrived and one or two other senior players arrived and you just think, perfect, the squad's taken shape. You can look forward just before the end of the window. And then they had a great run. Mm. A brilliant, brilliant run. And then it just went completely rolls reverse. It went flat on its face. And it was incredible watching from afar. But like I've just said, you know, 5 minutes ago, I really hope now that everybody connected with a football club can just be happy. And I don't want to call it mediocrity. I don't, because you shouldn't ever be encouraged by that. But just some stability. You know, a mid-table finish again next year, I don't think would be a bad thing. I think if you can blood the players as well, there's a number of young players that have gone out, left the club over the past 6 months, 12 months, likes of Elias Chair at Stevenage, and you think, can them kind of guys make an impression on the squad? Because I don't think it's going to be a flush with money.
Yeah. Let's move on to Leeds a little bit, Sean, because they've obviously got a massive game this weekend and you spent some time there up at Elland Road. They're taking on Derby County. We thought they might not even have to go through this. They look like they should get automatic promotion. Do you think that might affect them a little bit, this late season slump that they've been on?
Well, you don't want to go into the playoffs in a lack of form. I'm not saying Leeds have got that, but they were my tip. You know, especially after the start of the season, I thought they'd go up automatically with Norwich. I mean, I think you've got to give credit to another one of my old teams, Sheffield United, and say what a wonderful job Chris Wilder and the boys up there have done. I mean, that is remarkable.
Yeah,
that really is a great story. But Leeds, I was surprised with Leeds. I've said this once or twice on radio lately. I thought they'd delve a little bit deeper into the transfer funds in January, only on the basis of the way that they play. You know, this high energy way of playing, the high press when they lose the ball, it dictates a lot out of the players in terms of their energy levels. I thought they'd bring two or three in January, so I was a little bit surprised.
Just finally, Sean, because Charlton are playing this weekend and we obviously have a strong link with Charlton, and you've come up against them a couple of times this season with Oxford United. You actually beat them back in April. How do you assess their chances of going through what is a brutal League One playoff bracket?
Well, again, I mean, I've just paid reference to Chris Wilder. I think everyone's got to say the same about Lee Bowyer.
Yeah.
What a job. Brilliant job, you know.
Yeah, and massive.
Again, you throw into the equation just things perhaps not going as right as everybody would like them to off the field with the ownership situation. And Lee's just got his head down. He's kept his head down and him, Johnny Jackson and the coaching staff. But they got some good players as well. I mean, we did beat them for Oxford, but we thought they were the best team.
Yeah.
I thought they were the best team we'd come up against. They've got a little bit of everything, and with Lyle Taylor at the helm, I think, you know, that gives them a lot of encouragement for the semi-finals.
Well, if you could do us a favour and not send any texts about how to beat them to the Sunderland, Portsmouth and Doncaster lads, that'd be great, Sean. Thanks very much. Cheers for coming on the show. Always a pleasure to speak to you, Sean. Real good. Sean Derry there, former Leeds, former QPR midfielder, now working up at Oxford United as well, who turned over Charlton. Remember, they have their first game of the playoffs coming up this Sunday away at Doncaster. I think the nerves are probably starting to jangle in South London.
This is Love Sport.
And Love Sport Radio. This is the James Gray Show until 3:30 p.m. Looking forward to a big weekend of playoff action as well as the Premier League. Don't forget that Charlton are in playoff action on Sunday. They're taking on Doncaster. And on the line now, we've got a real legend of Charlton Athletic. Carl Lieben is on the phone. Carl, delighted to have you on. I've already interviewed your wife this month. She says that you surprised her with an anniversary dinner, which means she had to change the time. I assume it was worth it.
Always worth it, mate. Always worth it.
Well, congratulations on what sounds like a pretty lengthy marriage. So, she was very complimentary about you. So, I won't say more than that. Let's talk a bit of Charlton because it's a big weekend for the club. Are the nerves starting to jangle a little bit?
You know, you'll have a mixed bag, won't you? You'll have some that are nervous, some that don't get nervous, some have their little routines before games. But ultimately, when you get on the pitch, you know, you're looking to get results.
How impressed have you been with what Lee Bowyer has done this season? We just spoke to Sean Derry, actually, who's now coaching up at Oxford United. And he said Charlton are the best team they've played this season, bar none, in League One. What do you think is different about this Charlton side? They obviously play good football for a start.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a big believer that teams almost take on the persona of their manager.
Mm.
And Lee Bowyer is definitely a winner. He definitely wants to work hard. He tries to combine that with decent brand of football. You know, he's gone in there. I think he's always going to be a well-respected individual because of the career that he's had.
Mm.
Anyway. So, you know, the players feed into that. But, you know, he's been able to connect with the players, and that's obviously translated onto the pitch. And, you know, along the way, a little bit more luck, maybe money's bought elsewhere. He may have been able to get up in the top two because, you know, it's quite tight.
Mm.
But, you know, there's no use crying over spilt milk. He's going to be going into these games expecting to win them.
Yeah. We spoke to a couple of players on the show over the season, and one thing that seemed common to all of them was saying, look, Lee Bowyer could still be playing. He's that fit. You know, he's in such good nick. Do you think that makes a difference as a player when you look at a manager and almost think, yeah, I've seen you play, and B, you look like you almost still could. Do you think that drives that respect for among the players?
Yeah, that adds to the respect. You know, if you know, knowing him, he probably joins in training some of the times. You know, and I've seen him on some of the charity games, and he's buzzing. He wants to get stuck in. He wants to get goals. You know, so that must translate over to the players. One of the big things is the work rate and the enthusiasm. I always thought when Charlton work at their hardest, you know, they're within a good chance of winning the game. Too many games they've let oppositions kind of do what they want, but now they seem to be having that high press, what's so popular these days, and it seems to work.
Do you think they will go think that they are favourites? They obviously go in having finished third, but in League One, everyone's been talking about Portsmouth and Sunderland. No one's been talking about Charlton. Do you think that will give them a little bit of an ability to go under the radar a bit?
Yeah, perhaps, yeah, because you know, I was going to say you've got some big clubs involved in there, you know, with Portsmouth and Sunderland.
Mm.
As I say, you know, us going under the radar would have probably helped us. And, you know, at the end of the season, we've ended up popping up in third, which, you know, a lot of people didn't expect that.
Mm.
But, you know, now when it's the playoffs, it's almost a lottery. So, you know, coming third you know, you might think to yourself, well, you can't get too complacent. You can't think to yourself, oh, we've got the better draw, we've got Doncaster. You know, you've got to attack the games as you would any game. Because when it comes to the playoffs, you know, any one of them can win. As we know in that league, anyone on their day can win a game. So you've got to be on it, you've got to work hard, you know, stick to your principles, and hopefully you get that bit of luck.
Yeah. I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but if Charlton do get through to Wembley, you've played at some of the biggest grounds in the country, and you know, you've pretty much been there, done that, Carl, let's face it. Those nerves, obviously you try and treat it like a normal game, but going to Wembley, how do you deal with the sheer enormity of the occasion?
I think sometimes the nervous part comes before the games, you know, leading up to it, because, you know, as a player, you want to get stuck in.
Yeah.
As I said before, once the game actually starts, you know, you get into it, the nerves go. But, yeah, it can be a nerve-wracking situation coming up to the game, leading up to the game, you know, in the dressing room beforehand, walking out at Wembley. You know, that's when people are talking about the hairs on their neck standing up. You know, I'm sure it's going to be a full house for the game. You know, that's the game players want to be playing in. And, yeah, as I said, once they start the game, it's on.
And just finally, because I know you're a striker of some repute, and Charlton have had the services of Lyle Taylor this season, and he's been in really magnificent form. I wonder what you've made of watching him, and also of sort of knowing him a little bit. He seems, he did an excellent interview on the station a few months ago, he seems like a really switched on guy and a very level head in the dressing room.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I've seen him play, he exudes that kind of confidence, you know, especially in that league. He exudes the confidence, you know, as if he knows he's going to score. You know, you get me a chance. Even when he misses a goal, he almost says, you get me another chance, I'm going to score. He leads the line well. He works hard up there. And to be honest, he's displaying everything you want from your forward at the moment. And he's obviously scoring goals as well. So, you know, Lee's going to hope he can take that into the playoffs.
Yeah. Carl, thank you so much for coming on. We'll just be hoping Charlton can get through to Wembley, and then after that, who knows what can happen. Carl Lieben there, former Charlton striker, an absolute club legend as well. Of course, Charlton taking on Doncaster on Sunday in the first leg of their playoff semi-final, and then Friday, May the 17th, back at the Valley. That's when they will take on Doncaster for a place in that Wembley final against either Portsmouth or Sunderland.
This is Love Sport.
Now, Unai Emery, by qualifying for the final of the Europa League last night, could make history. If Arsenal win the Europa League, it'll be his fourth victory in the tournament. No manager has ever won that tournament, whether it's the Europa League or the UEFA Cup, four times. Quite remarkable it would be. Giovanni Trapattoni is the only one other than Emery who's won it three times, but this could be his fourth victory. Is he a specialist to this tournament? Why does it keep working out for him? Let's ask someone who will know better than me. Romain Molina is on the line. He is a French sports journalist. He's also the author of Unai Emery, El Maestro, and he can tell us a little bit more. Romain, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Many thanks for the invitation.
No, my pleasure to have you. Why don't you tell us, what is it with Unai Emery and the Europa League? How does he keep achieving this?
I mean, it's a love story, you know. Thing is, it's quite amazing because it's almost unreal. He didn't lose in confrontation since 2012, if I'm correct. I don't really know, but a lot of hard work. They prepared the game very, very well with his coaching staff. And, well, maybe it is mojo, but I would say love. Small love story, I would say.
But the other side of that is, this is the Europa League, not the Champions League. It seems, you think it's a sort of a limitation thing? Do you think it's an indication that maybe this is his level?
I don't think so. Because with Sevilla, I mean, Sevilla is not a Champions League club. If you look at the history of Sevilla, they were more a Europa League club. With PSG, I mean, Thomas Tuchel did the same of Unai this year. Before that, the manager, like Carlo Ancelotti and Laurent Blanc, did the same. So PSG failed in Champions League, so I don't think it's the blame of the manager. The thing is, with Arsenal, the first year Arsenal, they play Europa League, going to the final. So I don't think it's about Champions League and Europa League. I think it's more about the club where he is. And for the moment, the club where he is are more suited to Europa League than Champions League.
In terms of this Arsenal team and what Unai Emery is trying to achieve, How far do you think he is into this project? Because they only gave him a 2-year contract initially, and I thought that was strange. It doesn't show a lot of confidence in the manager, but what progress do you think he has made with Arsenal?
I think he made good progress. Obviously, it's not perfect, definitely not perfect, especially with the end of season in Premier League. But if you see the beginning of season and now he found the right balance in the team, the defense is weak, still weak. But with this team, you know, with the fullbacks, Kolasinac and Maitland-Niles were not very good defensively, but they're very good offensively. He allowed them to go forward with Lacazette, for Aubameyang and Ozil. I mean, we can see progress. I mean, Arsenal made good games this season, especially away from home in Europa League, which wasn't the case in the last couple of years. But the thing is, Arsenal is currently changing with Gazidis leaving, Sven Mislintat also leaving. So now we're waiting about who will manage the sporting director at Arsenal. So I think the biggest question for Arsenal is not the manager or the players, but who will be in charge of the sports politics of the club. I think that's the main question for Arsenal now.
And how do you think Emery will work? Do you think it'll be a case where Emery says, look, I want someone who does this, someone like this, or actually he's going to get told by Arsenal, this is who's coming in and you have to do what he says?
But the thing is, with sporting director, he normally has good relations, especially with Monchi, against Sevilla, but also during his first job in Lower Leagues in Spain.